Okay, so let's start. Today, we'll talk a little bit about Jungmann. Go a little deeper into the Miri discussion. We're not going to finish everything, but maybe we'll start Jungmann with a little bit of Ogun. Or maybe not. Maybe not. I'll defer to whoever's here about whether we want to do that. We're covering enough of the basics that we don't have to come back into it. So I just want to refresh your memory in discussing Chalukas HaShutfus, which is the premise of good or all good discussions. We saw Machlokas between the Rashba and the Rush about what's the halachic, maybe a priori is the wrong word, but in theory, what would the Doraisa fundamental din be in a case where you have Shutfus, She'enba, Kedei Chalukah, what should happen? The Rashba's view in Taftaf Kufnun Vav, and then again in Aleph Taftaf Kufnun Vav, and then again in Bez Kufmem Aleph in these Tshuvas, the Rashba's view is that if you have a Davar She'enbo Chaluka, what's the Meikar Hadin resolution? That any side could force a Chaluka, even though there's not enough for either side to get a full Chelak. Correct? He said, "De'ilu midina," from the fundamental perspective, or from the pure perspective of the Jewish principles, we would say, "Afilu chatzar de'les be'shir chaluka ilu ratza zeh litol chelko yitol." That any partner could force a division to take back his share, even when it's einbo kedei chaluka. That's very radical. But if the Rashba's right, let me ask you, what does that imply about good or agud? If good or agud is the takana, what's good or agud here to do? He says, "Lefikach tiknu lahem dina de good or igud," which he sees as a manifestation of asisa yashar v'atov, kidei shelo yafsidu zel zechelgam. So, what role does good or agud come to fill? Romy? What?
To make it efficient.
But as against each side forcing a chalukah when no one's going to get a full usable portion of it, right? So good or good is to make sure that the parties aren't losing out by a bad chalukah, correct? By a chalukah that harms them both. That's the role that good or good plays. So we keep the item intact and we have a buyout. According to the Rush, you get the opposite perspective in the Tshuvas. The Rush said that, based on the pure principles of Jewish law, what would happen, this is the Rush in Bava Asra Aleph Lamed Zayin, if you have a Davar She'en Bo Kedei Chaluka, against the Rashba, Meikar Adin, what's the halachic principle that would govern a dispute between two Shutfin? If it's Einbo Kedei Chaluka, what would the Mikra Din be? Shmuel? The Shutfus remains. Each side could say, "I want to keep the Shutfus intact, because I, as a Shutfus, I'm entitled to the whole thing." This we spoke about earlier in the year, because this is a debate about you know, how you view a partnership as constituted by the two individuals, correct? Each is an owner on half, or each is a half owner, that discussion, correct? In which case, what is good or all good coming to do? The Russian Achuva discusses this in Klal Tzadi Chesim and Zayin, which we also saw. Good or all good is a Takanas Chachamim, L'takin Chaluka B'chol Davar Shel Shutfus. And if there's no Shir Chaluka, you do a Begud or Igud. Why? Mishum. The Kedir, the Shutvi. Yeah, Eitan? Yeah, like it's going to be inefficient if they remain partners. Right, so Mikra Din, they're stuck in a partnership. But when we're talking good or good, also to create a more efficient solution to get them out of the partnership. Do you see that? So good or good is doing different things according to the Rashba and the Rush. According to the Rashba, it's there to avoid a physical division of an asset that can't be divided. Well, according to the Rush, it's there to avoid being locked in the partnership. Okay? That's fine, right? The buyout solution is a way to keep the thing intact. The question is, what's the harm that we're trying to avoid? According to the Rashba, the harm is being an individual owner of a non-substantial thing. According to the Rush, the harm is being locked in a partnership that's not conducive to collaboration. Okay? Great. I just wanted to be explicit about that. Now, according to both of those Rishonim, good or good is takana derabanan to remedy the inefficiency in the at the Doraisa level. Whether it's the Doraisa rule of being stuck in a shutfus or the Doraisa rule of being stuck with a non-substantial item. The Kiryas Sefer, the Mabit, which we saw, disagrees with all of this. And he says that when you're dealing with a davar shein bo chaluka, yesh bo din good o yigud, v'nir dechol zeh min haTorah. That's a Doraisa remedy. I don't have to talk about takanas hachamim, but at the Torah level, there's this special remedy of good o yigud. Okay? So I know we saw all these sources, but I just wanted to review them in the context explicitly of this solution of good o yigud. Okay? I'm going to come back to this when we talk about the Reb Nachum in a few moments. Any questions on this, Chazara? Okay. Now, in the Gemara in Bava Basra, Yud Gimel Amid Aleph, we saw Machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Reb Nachman, about whether we say Dino de Good O Yigud. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we do hold Good O Yigud. According to Reb Nachman, we don't. And we saw a Machlokas Rishonim between 2 days and Tosvos about how to figure out the pricing of a good oven. According to the Re, how do you price a good oven? Good.
What? Someone sets the price as they want.
Yeah, the Tovea, let's say, sets the price. And why is that price? So let me say this. The Tovea gets to set the price at whatever he wants. Yes? Why is that kosher? Why is that kosher for him to set the price at whatever he wants? From me? So, one argument is that it's fair because the adversary has the right to buy it at that price as well. So this is the point I just want to emphasize and drive home, is that the goodness or the propriety of a good of good lies in the symmetry that it affords. Right, so that, what?
Of the right, it's not of actual possibility.
Yeah. Can you spell symmetry?
Two.
Two ants?
Yeah.
Did I have it right the first time?
Two ants.
Two ants? There you go. So the symmetry theory, I want to call it a boomerang theory, is that whatever price he's asking you to pay him for, you could reverse on him and demand that he pay you that amount. Correct? So that symmetry or that reciprocity is what makes a good of all good fair, regardless of the actual pricing. Do you guys see that? A different way of thinking about why a good or good is fair, even though the pricing, according to the Re, could just be bidamim yikarim, is what? Benji?
Because he takes the risk initially, but then he takes the risk.
Well, I think that's a little bit of the symmetry thing, right? That he takes the risk of having to buy you out at that share. At that share price, right? Romy?
The mitzvah is going to benefit if he gets paid a higher amount.
Exactly.
Either way.
Exactly. Another way of thinking about the fairness is that he'll get adequate compensation. Right, so the fairness of good or well good doesn't lie in the symmetry of being able to boomerang or reverse the bid, but the fairness or the goodness of a good or well good lies in the fact that, well, okay, if he's overvaluating the company, then you just let him buy you out. And when he buys you out, you're overly compensated. Right, so it's like a zenana bizenana. Right, like the Pareto improvement idea. Right? So this, I would say, you could even say, or one way of thinking about it, and we'll talk about this more, is that this has a bit of an economic ring to it. No? Because it's adequate or better compensation if you value the company less than he does, so you're actually getting a bigger payout than you would get if you got the actual shares of the company. Somebody see that? So it's like a Pareto improvement, etc. The symmetry idea seems to be more just about fairness, right? It's fair in that whatever bid is on the table, you're given the same opportunity that he's given. Right, so the fairness lies in that the price doesn't bias the thing to one side more than the other. Again, except for cases where it's not going to work out, but let's assume both parties are equally wealthy, right? So I'm demanding a chalukah, I'm offering this amount, but you have a right of first refusal that you could assert your right to buy it out at this amount. Somebody see that? Do we both agree that both of these could be makers of fairness? Yeah. Okay. Roni, you disagree?
I don't disagree. I just like the way you said that.
Makers of fairness?
Yeah.
I was going to say determinants of fairness. I think makers of fairness has a better sound to it. Josh?
But number two doesn't work with that number one, right? Because it's not saying that he has to price it at over. He would be able to price it under with that number one. With that symmetry. Right?
Well, that's true.
Okay.
But the point is that what makes it good is that at the end of the day, you're getting adequate compensation.
I mean, you get the price to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a fair market value. Right. Okay, the Ritzvah disagrees. You want to figure out why does the Ritzvah disagree? The Ritzvah disagrees and he thinks, no, you can't go for Eloi Damim. You always go for fair market value. So how do we understand the Ritzvah's position? Why does the Ritzvah not like this? Right? On the it seems pretty fair. Let's call this a read. Why is the Ritzvah all worked out? All worked up about this. Rumi?
One possibility is
he doesn't
think it should be symmetrical.
Okay, so one possibility is that he thinks you won't always achieve these results in all cases. Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Maybe. So you could say, oh, these fail in a lot of cases. Right? So maybe that's the Ritzvah's point. Right? Like, because you'll have cases where there won't be true symmetry, and you'll have cases where the mitzvah won't be adequately compensated. Is that what you're saying?
Well, sort of. I mean,
like, for example, the Ani and Ashir cases, right?
Yeah, I think it's a sharp move. The way we presented the B was big. Like, you said, well, no, we're assuming that there are cases where they're both equal up, right? And the Ritzvah can't do that because the read already assumed
can. Okay.
Then they're not really disagreeing.
That's fair. That's maybe that's the Miri's point, even. Right, like even the first day acknowledges that, right?
And then my second thing is that I'm not sure how you could not.
But I'm not committed to my answer to you about the Rishita.
Because right,
I think you could say, an Ani, let the Ani borrow money.
So assuming that, which to me seems like the shot of the Ri, is that he doesn't think we said anything.
Yeah.
Then we do it to that, although I don't think anything. I'm not sure the present failure in the second having a conversation.
My vision is not.
We have to do this then.
Question if it's louder. Yeah, I'll talk about this.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you're not going to get out of the competition. You pay more than it's worth, how is it not out of the competition? But yeah, I think on the symmetry,
In the Ritz-Buzz case, I'll tell you how. In that case of the that the basic list of codes from the Yadarma, and one of the concerns of the Meiri, that the Ashir could price it under fair market value, knowing that the Ani can't even afford that.
Well, that's not adequate compensation.
Right, so you're not going to get adequate compensation in cases.
Oh, sorry. I mean, that's not done in the economy. You'll tell me to show them.
Well, this is just, you might say, this is one consideration that leads him to reject the Dam Yikarim allowance.
So that requires him to say, sorry, I'll jump, but that requires him then just to be saying, oh, the problem is the reason, because if you say Dam Yikarim, that implies also Dam Kutim or whatever.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm going to apply that kasha because...
You're saying Ri himself might only be Dam Yikarim.
Yeah,
okay, so we'll come back to that, actually. So let me just say this, and I'll take Josh's hand. If you look at the Aguda is a Talmud of Talmidim of the Maharam of Wittenberg. Usually he doesn't have much new to say, but here he just has an interesting twist on the Riva, or the Ritzba's Shita. Sometimes when Tosafot quotes the Riva, it's really the Ritzba. You just don't quote that Tzadi. You know, there's the Riva and the Ritzba, the very different personalities. The Ritzba is the brother of the Rosh Mishantz, but oftentimes he gets quoted as the Riva. Here it seems clear that he's quoting the Ritzba. He says, "Veinir l'Ritzba," he disagrees with the Ri. "The imkein kol ashir yisalek ani shutfa b'davar she'en bo kedei chaluka." What's the concern here? It's formulated much more broadly than in Tosfos. Tosfos has this concern about the Chatzer Shem Bo Kedei Chaluka. What's the concern of the Aguda? Daniel? Every time, right? So what type of concern is that? The Imkein Kol Ashir Yisalik Ani Shitva B'davar Shem Bo Kedei Chaluka. Benji? Exactly. I think the way the Aguda understands the Ritzba's objection is that there isn't genuine symmetry in a lot of cases because the Ani can't match the Ashir. Right? Good. So the particular failure is that there's, according to the Aguda, it's actually... If you allow somebody to raise the price, you're not going to have genuine symmetry. And that undercuts the fairness of a good Oagud. The whole point of a good Oagud is that both parties have an equal shot at taking the Neches HaMeshutaf.
Those aren't the same
thing. What?
Those aren't the same thing.
No, we'll get to this in a second. This is going to be a denial of the adequate compensation thing. Right? But the Aguda's point is that you're depriving the Ani of his ability to buy out the Ashir. Correct? Benji?
So it seems like the Aguda is also assuming that this is a case where the Ani can easily afford the fair market value of the property.
I suppose. Or that if he can't afford fair market value, then he's not entitled to. It's okay that there's no symmetry.
Okay.
This was Romy's issue last year, right? You know, how much of protection could you have for an Ani Shutav? Josh?
Can I give a suggestion?
Sure. The Chavod Rav.
Is it possible that the Ritzva disagrees on the economic theory that everything can be translated to dollar amounts, and he's concerned being he wants the guy to be able to get a chutzer, and like you're getting priced out of it, but it's not that, oh, you get more money now, and the chutzer is worth less than that, so you should be happy, meaning... Oh. No, like you want to be able to have the chutzner.
You're saying the adequate compensation thing.
Maybe.
Yeah. Let's come back to that in a second. I mean, your point is that there's...
it's not true that the chutzner could just be translated to dollar values, and since it's less, you're happier with getting more money.
Meaning, so there's no fair compensation. Right?
Sure.
I mean, because once you allow for subjective valuations, correct? Well, I guess this, you still are relying on the fact that he can't then offer more money to buy out the Ashir.
Because
if the Ani subjectively values it at more than the Ashir, he should be willing to pay more than the Ashir. The answer is that he can't because he doesn't have the funds. So the real problem is that he can't use the... There's no symmetry in that he can't really exercise his right to buy out the Ashir. Right?
Think about it.
Yes. Well, let's think about that a little more. I do want to add. Well, let's go to the Meiri, and then I'll say more about this. I reread the Meiri several times. Anybody go back to the Meiri to sit on it? And I read the Meiri with the footnotes, and the footnotes guy says that Yigdolim Mefarshim is the Ravid, like Dov, but he says, "Oh, but we don't have this Ravid anywhere." So maybe it's all a mistake that, you know, in one place he quotes the Ravid as Gedolim Mefarshim, and then Dov and the footnotes think that everywhere the Gedolim Mefarshim is the Ravid. Maybe the Gedolim Mefarshim changes, no? Why does it have to be the same person in every Masechta?
They're inconsistent.
What?
They're inconsistent.
I think that's true, no? Like, why can't the Gedolim Mefarshim in Bava Basra be different than the Gedolim Mefarshim in, like, Maseches Midos? No? I'm gonna write an article on this. I'm just gonna work through the Gedolim Mefarshim thing. What?
Pretty confusing thing to do if that's what you do.
Did the rabbis and why you also change rankings based on what Masechta we're doing during the year?
For sure. Look, in the Gemara you have that, right? Like Hilchos Sekhar of Nachman Bedini is because he was like an expert in Choshen Mishpat type things, right? And same we saw in Kam Dina Hadar Dina discussion, right? Like who you paske and there's those because he's a Dayan, so he's Baki Tvei, things like that. So yeah, I think it's certainly reasonable to think that people's expertise changes based off Limud. Just going back to Kam Dina, how great were those articles in the Times about the legitimacy of the Supreme Court? I thought that was like right on target, right? There's an article today actually about how with the leak of the draft, the Supreme Court has no more legitimacy than the other branches of government. You guys see that? Well, you're saying who cares?
Like, why is that the case?
Yeah.
Well, why is that the case? Because people, it's all this perception of like, it's an institution that's apolitical and just applying. Well?
It's like they have noted that all the other courts are have always been political.
No, other parts of government. I mean, like the legislature and the executive branch, which are expressly political. But anyway, I digress. I forgot we have a very short cheer today. So the Meiri says, courtesy of Amtrak, the Meiri says that he likes the day that you could be Ma'ala Bidam. Sorry, he says the Gedolei Mefarshim say you can be Ma'ala Bidamim. And notice that he gives it a thumbs up. On what basis? Why does he give his stamp of approval to this shita that he ultimately rejects? But in the interim, why does he give it interim approval? Ach min asvara hol v'omer tikach o titein, which is what type of rationale? Symmetry, right? It's good in virtue of both parties having the option to take possession of the chayfetz. Then he quotes the days that disagree, and they say you need bekiyim, bechenikar, etc. And then he threw in his v'yirli, his qualification of the Shita Rishona, of the review. And I think so when you read this carefully, it's clear this is what he's saying. When it's an Ani against an Ashir, and the Ashir likes the thing a lot, and therefore the Ashir is jacking up the price so that he could win it, right? I.e. automatically deprive the Ani of his power to, right, to exercise his right. Lo nichofeyu elabidamav. We're not going to force the Ani to accept or counter with the same bid that the Ashir offered. We're only going to force the Ani to meet it at Kadesh Avyav. So I actually think what might happen in this case, maybe Romi will like this. Let's say the Ashir, let's say the Chayfetz is worth $500,000 on the fair market. On the free market. The Ashir says, I'll give you $1 million for it. So the Ani, I think, could either accept that $1 million, or he could counter with $500,000. That's what I think emerges from this view of the Meiri. Right, lo nechofeyu ela bedama. A different way of reading the Meiri would be to say, whenever it's an ani against an asher, we automatically go to fair market value. Right, so we say, oh, there's a discrepancy between your ability to bid in this situation. So we automatically go to fair market value for a bid or a good buyout. But I think you can read the Meiri as saying, no. Of course, according to the Re, the Ashir can make a bid for $1 million and the Ani could accept to be bought out at that. But the Ani could, if he wants to buy it, he could counter and buy it for fair market value. It's Chiddush. But I think that would be the most precise reading of the words here. Right? Lo nichofehu, we're not going to force the Ani to counter ela bedamav, just at fair market value. Daniel, do you like that? Or what?
Makes sense.
Compelling also, or?
Okay.
So he does
go with symmetry.
Well, there's still symmetry in the ability to purchase it. The symmetry doesn't have to be the purchase price, right? The fairness is that you had a thing that was co-owned. We want to make sure that either the shutvin have an equal shot at taking possession of it.
Symmetry, you have like a ratio, like whatever this big exorbitant amount is to the usher's wealth or something, and then have that same ratio to the money's wealth or something.
Something maybe. It's a tricky thing. You know, people have this suggestion for, there are some countries. There's a great article years ago about this guy who was speeding in, like, I want to say one of the Nordic countries. And he was driving his Porsche at, like, 130 miles an hour. And he got a ticket for $20,000. And it's because tickets are supposed to be deterrents for speeding. In America, the cops give you a ticket. There's fixed amounts per ticket regardless of your wealth status. But that's not going to deter a wealthy person to speed. So I'll drive 150 on the freeway. I get pulled over once or twice. I get paying $180 ticket's nothing, right? So what they do in those countries, they fix it based to your wealth. Like, so to deter a rich person from speeding, it's got to be a $20,000 ticket, right? Which is kind of what you're saying, Zev, in this scenario. Okay. So this is about the symmetry issue, and I think it's a very fascinating theory. And then he says, "V'chein im ha'ashir nosein breira l'damim kalin." If the ashir is undervaluing the thing because he knows the ani can't meet his undervaluation, even, what do we do? Ein shomim lo el omer lo good o yigud al pibakiyim. In that case, we just automatically go to fair market value. Do you see that? By the way, notice that it's meduyak if you contrast these cases. If you think that this Alpi Bekiyim is only going on this V'chein, and I think it's Meduyah, because in the first case it says Lo Nechofeyu El Bedamav, and in this last case he says Omer Lo Gudo Igud Alpi Bekiyim, it's Meduyah that it's only in this last case of undervaluing, that we say the whole Gudo Igud is now a fair market value. He didn't say that for the first case that we described. I think it's Meduyah, like my reading. I just wanted to add that. But notice in this last case of undervaluing, what's the concern here? Is it a symmetry concern? Josh?
No, it's not getting the market value.
Exactly. It's an adequate compensation concern. For sure it's an adequate compensation concern. That's why once you go to fair market value, you should say, okay. Now, again, you can't perfectly preserve symmetry in that case because if you're going, the onion can't afford fair market value even. But you can see that there is also this concern of adequate compensation. And the Meiri is basically saying both of these have to be addressed, right? So he has these fixes for the Rishita. Okay. Let me make one more ha'ara here. The Meiri says, V'chinam davar zeh shavel lezeh ha-megazem yoser mechavero, kegon shesmucha l'sada shelo oze ole eze siba. Let's say one party just really wants the thing. Right? He's chomed the davar that's the partnership owns. What happens then? So if you asked me, I would have said, great, let him overpay for it. Because you have Pareto improvements, right? Because the other part is being adequately compensated. I would have said that. But the Meiri doesn't say that. The Meiri implies that if one party so badly wants the object that he's going to raise the price just to outbid the other party, that's still not kosher. Why is that not kosher? What could be wrong with this? Clearly not an adequate compensation thing, right, Benji?
Pricing failure?
I want to say it's a no symmetry, it's a symmetry problem, right? Because as a shutaf, we want each shutaf to have a fair share at getting the thing. The argument here is that the guy who's chomed it so badly is going to raise the price exorbitantly, he's going to be megazim, he's going to exaggerate, such that it's never going to be even within reach for you to get it.
But why do we care? Isn't that the whole point?
Yeah. Like that's what I said before about the... like
he's adequately compensated.
Yeah. Field.
It's very schwer. It's very schwer miri. You can see here in my comment here in the Sarachian, I was thinking about it through. I think the answer is, well, you have to see it makes sense in the miri, is that he's thinking that good or all good might just be a way of getting to reasonable fair market value pricing. Like, if you do this bidding procedure, it'll approximate fair value between the parties. Like, you'll hit some equilibrium. But that's not going to be true when one person has some special reason for wanting to pay less.
Why is this problem not the same problem that exists just if the guy wants to buy, assuming the initial formulation is still being firm? Why is it the same exact case?
It's a similar type issue, right?
But he doesn't raise it in that.
I think it's a similar type of consideration with the first.
In the first case, you didn't do problem with the symmetries. Right? The whole thing was we say that is symmetrical because there's opportunity to buy now.
In this case?
Yeah.
Well, there we're letting him buy you out, but dumb of.
Saying. Why is it a different kasha or a different answer? And why are those two different questions? I mean, according to what you just said, right? Really, according to what you're highlighting now, it really is symmetrical because he has that opportunity to buy now. And then the next line it says
you're saying here.
That's
right. At fair market value, correct?
Yeah, so it is symmetrical. And the next line is. What? It's not symmetrical when he tries to buy now at a higher price.
If the megazim. But for the same reason, the megazim just has some subjective reason for evaluating this higher.
It's the same point twice, isn't it? It's the same point twice, except you're suggesting that there are two different, one is a problem and one isn't a problem. In the first case, the Tovea raises a lot.
Sorry. The first case seems to trade on the fact that the Ani just can't afford to buy it now. Right? That's why you have a symmetrical problem in the first case. But Dani can't afford to meet the bid. In the second case, it seems to be less that the guy can't afford it, and more a problem that the usher is just, sorry, not the usher, but that the adversary is so intent on getting it that he's going to pay any amount for it. And then that distorts the pricing. Now, if you ask me, that's fine, because the other party is going to get overly compensated. I would have said that's kosher. But clearly the Miri doesn't say that. Now, it's a mystery to me why he doesn't say that. Correct? Elamai, he's thinking that when you have a shutfus, you want both parties to have a reasonable shot at buying it. Correct? So it must be that the Miri's thinking that good or well good is just a way of approximating a fair pricing. But whenever somebody has a special interest in getting the thing, that's going to distort the pricing mechanism of good or well good, so we just go to fair market value. I'll peep a key in. That's what I suggest over here. But it's a chiddush, because I don't think good or all good is just a way of getting at fair market value. Good or all good is a way of having symmetry, adequate compensation, Pareto improvement. So maybe the Miri just has a weird view of it. I want to make one last point before we close, but don't worry, we're going to pick up a little bit with good or all good in June's man, unless it's a gzera shein atzibur yechol ma'amudba, in which case we will not pick up with it at all. I just wanted to draw your attention to this very fascinating Or Zerua, and I think this is a deeply important question about pricing mechanisms in general. So the Or Zerua here discusses the Shita, he quotes it as the Bitzav Bar Mordechai, the Shita of the Ri, like D'yachal L'halos B'damim B'chol Masha Yirtza, you could jack up the price as much as you want. And the guy can't respond and say, no, I'll only pay you fair market value. Right? If the Toveya says $1 million, the Nitva either has to be bought out or buy out at that amount. What's the rationale for that? He says, Dehoil shezeh no sein aleha kach, or dehoil shezeh no sein aleha kach kach. Since the guy is offering that amount, hare he shave. What does that mean? Vim near his bane of yikara, itin lo es chelko. What does that mean? Ned? Yeah. If what is value? It's the amount that somebody's willing to pay for something. Right? So if you have a bid, it's like in the housing market, right? People say, no one knows what these homes are worth now. The market's so crazy. Like, a home's worth whatever someone's willing to pay for it. So here you have a good oil good. You're putting up for an auction. You have a bid. That bid will determine the price of the thing. So I just think that this is a very fascinating, the defense of the Ri's view is not about symmetry per se, adequate compensation, but actually the Orzarua, I think, give a much sharper point that it's about the theory of pricing, that fair pricing is whatever the market will bear. You have one Mishugana who wants to overpay for the thing, that's what the market bears. Right? It's very interesting, at the Beis Din, you know, a couple was getting divorced, and one of the parties wanted to buy out the other in the house. Right? Like, the house was co-owned. So the question is, how do you determine the pricing? So one party wanted to list it and see what the actual offers are. The other party said, why don't we just hire a bunch of brokers who will do an evaluation? And the back and forth was, like, brokers will just tell you what they think the market will bear, but the only way to actually know is to get offers and see what somebody will actually pay. So I do think that there's this very fascinating notion here in the Orzarua, like, the true value has to include the actual offer from the person who is making the bid. Let me just say that goes to my money. How will it prevent what? Yeah, I don't think that... We don't know how the Ri addresses the Ani Asher thing. I mean, you're getting compensated.
Right.
You're getting fully compensated, right? So, okay, Kobe wants me to end, so let me just say one more thing. The Hagos Maimonios... Yeah. The Hagos Maimonios in Shechinim Aleph Beis has a similar point where he says... Make 2 points here. Afagab de Hilchus HaKabase... The Rav Nachman Bedini. This is normally possible Rav Nachman in Dini Mamonis, but here we're poskening like Rav Yehuda. Interesting point. He says Amemar is Basra, and Amemar poskens that there is good or good. He cites the Ri, Filu Damim Yakarim. Why are you able to jack up the price? Kivan to Kivan Sharot Eliten Kach Imkein Lo Hu Shaveh Kach. So this is a very fascinating statement. This is what it's worth to the Toveya. It's actually worth this amount. So is he saying like the Orzarua that, okay, that's the fair market value is what somebody's willing to pay? Or is he saying something deeper? I think he's saying something deeper. I think he's saying that it would almost be wrong to deprive the Toveya of getting the Chefetz for less than he values it at. We're seeing, he's a shutev in the same, right? He values it at $1 million. The other guy values it at $500. So if we were to split it at 500,000, sorry, whatever the lower price is, you're robbing the Toveya of the asset that he, right, of that difference in valuation. Correct? So there's some reason to say, if this is the valuation, then we'll give it to him. He values it more. And from an economic perspective, you always want to put the chefetz in the hands of the person who values it more. It's like, because they're getting more value out of it. As for the other party is being adequately compensated. Okay, so let's stop here. You guys will get back to me on whether we will discuss this in Junzman or not. And then we'll touch base about the Bechina scheduling and all that. All right? Shkach, guys.